Well, good evening and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast Wednesday webcast with me, Scott Kesson Rennie, and him,
Al Coates.
Oh, that was a very basic introduction there, wasn't it?
Well, that's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah. So if you've tuned in tonight, sadly, Adele Bates isn't with us. She had a last minute thing go on. So we did kind of put it out on Facebook and the Twitter machine. But just in case you missed out, she's not here tonight. But hopefully we'll have her on again soon.
Definitely.
Yes, exactly. So what are we going to do tonight, Al? Come on.
Well, we were going to do this actually in a few weeks, weren't we? We had a plan to do this. So
yes.
What we'd really like to do is articulate some of the stuff that we're planning to do on the 12th of March with our, we're doing a little half-day practice day, specifically in relation to challenging behaviour that families live with. And that starting to unpick really not just, you know, solutions and tips and tricks and all of that kind of stuff, but sort of unpicking it really about the impact on parents and carers. And so tonight we thought we'd really focus in on the impact on parents, because then it's kind of a little half an hour preamble before we do the practice day. So it means we can talk more about that, because I think that's something that we don't necessarily talk too much about. And so I guess I'm conscious that I'm talking your head off, but I'll keep going. Just interrupt when we get to it. I'm conscious that everything we talk, I know it is what it is, but I think people need to know that we're very conscious that children's behaviour, this is stuff we'll do on the day, but children's behaviour often comes out of a position of stress and anxiety. It comes out of, you know, we understand that the first victim in challenging behaviour is the child, and they are the ones that are living in this really complicated world where how they see themselves and the world they live in. So even though we're focusing on our parents, please don't see that as us dismissing or kind of putting them in the perpetrator role, because under no circumstances do we see children in that role. Do we, under no circumstances, can we say that? Yeah, we can say that.
Yeah.
Well, even that, when we talk about definitions, I know some people are kind of uncomfortable with, you know, there's definitions, then people slip into perpetrator language. Yeah.
But I think, definitions are definitely a tricky one. And I know we're going to cover a lot more of that on the 12th of March, aren't we? But I think as well, there's it's when you actually see. So before I met Al, just to let everybody know, I didn't realize there was such a and Al and I have known each other a few years now, but I didn't realize there was such a thing as child parent violence. When we think about child parent violence, and of course that kind of aggressive nature of some some children, young adults, teenagers, can often be missed in terms of that definition as well. So what's interesting from my perspective is kind of not necessarily, it's not a blame thing, like you say, you know, it's not about blaming the children. There's obviously a reason why they're expressing these behaviours and, you know, the way they are. It's about being able to, for me to be able to go, actually, that's because of that. That's why that's happening. So it's not because, you know, they're doing it intentionally or, you know, whatever. So there's a lot to learn about definitions, not just kind of what is child and parent violence, what is violent aggressive behaviour. It's much wider than just child and parent violence.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to see that the violence is, if you think of aggression is a spectrum from, you know, very minor behaviour right through to violence. And I think that often children's behaviour can be on that trajectory towards violence, and at every possible opportunity we've got to try and divert or intervene or turn left or turn right or, you know, throw a bucket of cold water over it to stop it. Not over children.
Yeah.
I'll be very careful what I say in case I can see my social work registration literally flying away. And then he said to throw buckets of water over children. I did not say that. Oh, sometimes I just need to shut up. That interesting, when you talk about that violent, you know, child-to-parent violence, I think that actually sometimes even that, because if you're living with low-level aggression from children, then you discount yourself from that and you say, oh, that's not me.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's someone else. That's someone who's living in real extreme. And we've had some of those stories on the podcast. So I think that, even it's comparable to our understanding of domestic violence, is that we've changed how we see what domestic violence isn't just being hit. It's about coercion. It's about control. Yeah. It's about threat, which is a really interesting, if you don't do what I say, then I'm going to kick off. So fantastic. I think it's really complicated. And in some ways people go, yeah, but I want to know how to, I think a lot of parents come to me, and probably to you as well, and go, just tell me what to do. Just tell me
how to. All the time.
And that's, it's difficult to, because I'm conscious, and there's some great books out there, but this idea of manualization of behavior strategies, the idea that we give you an A to Z, I'm not critiquing anybody's particular book, but this idea that you give people a list of things to do to fix your child or to intervene in their behavior, I think can be quite unhelpful, because it presumes an awful lot about you as an adult. And if you can't meet that standard, that's really problematic. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And also I can say to somebody, well, and I haven't, thankfully, because I don't feel that I can, because I'm with you on that. There's so much. But every family, every child is different. So the results are going to be different for every kind of strategy that we use. But I think broadly, it's important that, we understand the kind of circumstances around the situation that one specific incident might, what may have caused it, was it us that caused it by saying something, doing something, all that sort of stuff. But I think that's where I would start from, rather than say, right, here's 10 things that you should try. Those 10 things, and I've had advice on this, years ago when I thought, actually, I'm going to say this out loud and tell people that this is what we experience. Oh, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And then you go through this phase of trying things and they don't work. And you think, so it's very different for everybody. And, the kind of handling techniques and stuff like that, if it's that extreme, which ours was, they made things 10 times worse. Mm-hmm. If we'd just let things go, then maybe it would have been easier. But people were telling us to try these kind of hand techniques, and it just we ended up getting hurt.
It's petrol on the fire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and I think that the day we stopped doing this is just us. This is not I'm not saying that everybody should try this, but the day that we stopped trying to control it physically, it actually lessened. And lessened and lessened and lessened. So that was a massive learn for us. It still happens every now and again, but it's more kind of the verbal aggression now. Thankfully, no more bruising at the moment.
That's good. Anyway. That's good. You've raised some really interesting points. Sorry, I buttoned. Do you want to keep going?
No. No, you're fine. Because I'm just, I'm conscious of? I'm conscious. If we give too much away tonight, nobody will come on the 12th of March. So we need to.
Good point.
Need to keep my powder dry, really.
Maybe we should say, and we're going to give our top 5 tips for supporting children's behaviour. And, if you do these 5 things, we promise that your child or your life will be transformed. No, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But you raised this really interesting idea for me, is that one of the key things, takeaways I want for any practitioners out there, is this idea that there's often this blame, parents feel incredibly blamed. And I think that practitioners, social work practitioners, have to kind of get their heads around this idea that often there's this really complicated system dynamic where parents are not necessarily to blame for the reasons why children are how they are and how they see the world. However, parents may be pouring petrol on the fire.
Yeah.
However, telling parents that isn't necessarily going to help. It's about having that wisdom to sort of, I think it's that wisdom to say to parents, this isn't your fault, but the solution probably lies in your hands. And that's quite a different nuance to say, you might be the solution, but you need to maybe adjust how you parent to create a different home environment. And I think that manualization is one of the dangers of that, is that you, I think the impact of violence and aggression on families is that they become a bit wonky and they can start to lose sight of stuff. And I know that in our experiences that you sort of, some people sort of get tunnel vision. And then if you give them these set of rules, this manual for how to support children's behaviour, it can become like a hammer to beat a child with.
Yeah.
You know, like you were talking about that how to physically intervene. But actually, if you look back, and I don't want to make it about the Scott Therapy Show.
No. Not tonight,
If you look back, then perhaps you would see that you were not in the best place to use some of those techniques anyway.
Yeah.
I am conscious my internet is crap tonight. But
it's very bad. I was just going to say again, so it's a way of keeping people intrigued as to what we're going to talk about on the 12th of March.
We're recording it locally, so we'll be able to put it out on a podcast tomorrow. So tomorrow it will be as crystal clear on the podcast. So if people want to listen, that'll be out tomorrow first thing. I apologise. Yeah. These pearls of wisdom that I'm spewing forth.
Spewing forth, yes.
So, Scott, you've been around, and you know you've had. I think one of the things from your previous roles and different your experience, you've had loads of contact with lots of different families, and you've seen this firsthand across a whole range of different people. What are your reflections upon the impact of difficult behaviour on families?
Well, that's an interesting one because, like you say, you know, we speak to people every day. I think there was a point on social media where we started talking about violence from our young people, and I think that was the catalyst for everybody, for others to go, "Oh my days, that's something that I, you know, have an issue with as well." And since then, it's kind of escalated. And, you know, I get, probably like you, I get a number of messages, you know, asking for advice, what they should do, etc. And I think that you and I have done a couple of things as well about this kind of thing in person, actually. You know, that time when we used to text each other and talk to people.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But I think that... I think the biggest change has been that people are talking about it. And Helen Bonnick was one of the catalysts for me in terms of being able to do that. And a lot of others as well, because actually her website is full of kind of resources, materials. And if you don't get anything from it, you can at least get a little bit of validation. And I think that is one of the main things that parents need, is validation. Actually, this does happen. Now, you know, I'm sure there are a very small amount of cases where there, you know, you could blame the adult for kind of instigating, you know,
absolutely,
these kinds of things. But I think in the main, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who it shocks when it first happens. And, you know, I'm sure between the two of us, we could tell many stories of our shocked kind of reactions to this kind of behavior from any number of our kids. But I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is people are shocked when it first happens and shamed. They feel ashamed. They feel that they've failed as parents. They feel that they've not done their job properly. And they feel that, you know, they're to blame as well. And I think that, you know, some of the stuff that I've been looking at lately as well in kind of leading up to the 12th of March is some of the reactions that they get when they report this kind of behavior, because
let's
face it, it's probably gotten better. Yeah. From professionals. I think we can safely say it has gotten better.
Yeah.
However, there is still a long way to go in the way that we deal with this. And, you know, we've still got this thing about being referred to, safeguarding, and that's still an issue. My hope is on the 12th of March to be able to kind of share that is a worry. So actually, you know, in terms of how many people report it to their post-adoption social team or children's services, is probably, you know, they probably don't have correct figures, because the fear of people potentially losing their children or being kind of convicted for abuse. You know, that's one of the things that I've picked out of stuff that I was reading today, of one parent who actually got convicted. So it's a tricky one. What I'd like to say, though, is that I think that those that have the time, so I'm talking not talking about parents now, I'm talking about therapists and psychologists and the research that are doing a good job of trying to help and support. But as everything, post-adoption support isn't consistent across the four nations. We can say that across four nations, yeah. Not consistent, and it's not consistent, you know, neighbor to neighbor kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's something that we need to work on. And it could well be that, you know, and no offense to anybody who's a social worker out there, but it could well be that it's a difference in kind of experiences with social work, or it could be a difference in the beliefs of some social workers, let's say. You know, I think we've gone past that kind of phase, well, that stage really, where parents are not believed by, especially if they're in adoption, because I'd like to think that adoption social workers are really well trained with this sort of stuff. But, you know, that's still out there for some, and it's, you know, it's not consistent.
I think it's, yeah, and it reflects perhaps a difference between post-adoption support workers and maybe permanency social workers who are working perhaps with children who are in their special guardianship arrangements. We also know that there's a high prevalence within the children with special educational needs and disabilities community. So, you know, that it's a patchwork, isn't it, of how professionals respond. And I think that can be incredibly isolating for families. I think we were chatting before we came on about another one of the impacts is that families are often in shock. There's a sense of this was not part of the script, you know, and I'm sure if you've perhaps been in, you know, for adoptive parents, this is, you know, that their lived reality then becomes sort of slips outside of what they had anticipated and is isolating them from their community. And, or another example is perhaps special guardians who perhaps, you know, they're in a different time of their life, you know, they're older, or an auntie or uncle, but this wasn't their plan. You know, this wasn't, you know, I'm sure no grandparent, well, I am a grandparent. It's not my plan to look after my grandchildren. It's my plan to spoil them with sweets and, you know, sugar and things like that. So there's a sense that parents are carrying an awful lot, even before they necessarily get to this behaviour, which then again impacts on their capacity to manage the behaviour. So I think there's this sort of two-handed, there's this constant sort of balancing of what's the impact of the parents' kind of vulnerabilities, their isolation, the impact of loss, you know, the impact of living with adversity. We know that, you know, if you live in an environment where adversity is ongoing, and you'll know families who've been at this for, you know, not 3 or 4 years, but a decade, supporting difficult behaviour. When does that adversity slip into trauma? And then you've got a system that's kind of really struggling to maintain order, and roles are totally disrupted because you've got a parent who's potentially traumatized and you've got a child who's living perhaps with historic trauma. And then you walk in as a social worker and you go, right, where on earth do I start here? Because it's chicken and egg, isn't it? I mean, I know people who are genuinely unwell with the because of the adversity that they are finding in their families.
Yeah, and that was something I noticed today as well when I was going through some of this stuff, was so the survey, because the survey that you did, wasn't it? The survey that I've been looking at, and it was one that you did a couple of years back. And I think it still kind of serves the same purpose, really. But what I found very interesting was that you had a list of things that people could... there's only so many that you can put as a choice, but there was more than double that number again where people had free written the impact on their kind of lives. And even then I kind of narrowed it down a little bit, because, you know, it's an impossible one. But, you know, even physical health of carers has been affected as a result of this kind of these behaviors, you know. And when we say physical, I mean, that could be anything. Obviously, we don't have that kind of information, but, you know, it could well be that, you know, people are really affected to the point where, you know, they are struggling physically to be able to deal with this sort of stuff. And there's so many kind of different things. That the one thing that I did pull out was this loss of faith in services. So as a result of people reporting and it not being either understood or dealt with appropriately, or even a kind of quick response. You know, people are on their knees and they're dealing with this sort of stuff at 8 o'clock at night. Where do they go? Who do they ring? What do they do? You know, well, the chances are they probably go to their support network first. But the trust and service provision is knocked down then as a result of the reaction of whoever it is that they ring first. And I think that is one of the kind of, you know, key areas that we need to kind of focus in on improving. And the other worrying thing is sibling trauma as well. So if there's siblings in the household, not only the physical effects that potentially could have, but also the emotional and you know, emotional impact that can have on these siblings who maybe have nothing to do with the kind of the issues that you know that are experiencing, and that's quite high. That's, you know, out of all those, it was quite high on the old survey thing. Anyway, I'm rambling on now, but the impact thing really was quite interesting to read because, you know, it varies family to family, but there's more than just kind of, it's more than just a tick box. You know, when you literally, when you put in a free form there, it's like typey typey. That was interesting as well.
Well, I think that was survey was it 2018? That's 3, maybe 4 years old now. And I think a lot of that still bears truth, and I think we've seen a really high prevalence within the adoption community, but I'm conscious that that's just within the community. So that means there's peer-to-peer, that's fantastic, but that means that, but still within families and communities, there's still these sort of stereotypical views of what that, you know, we talked to a lot of families, you know, and my experience is that the people in my family kind of start to think that it's maybe just me. That maybe I'm just this kind of wishy-washy parent. And then you're trying to instigate this kind of high, you know, this therapeutic model of parenting, which is, you know, high nurture, high structure. And they see that as being really not quite a good way of parenting. They see it as wishy-washy when, you know, for example, you saying, you know, one of your children's effing and jeffing at you. In any other family, that's not, you know, that would be, you'd go, hey, if you don't shut up, da-da-da-da-da. But you know that if you go, hey, if you don't shut up, then you know that you're going to overload the system and you're going to exacerbate it. But someone watching on, you know, and we know that our parenting shifts, you know, that I know that the parent I am in Asda is not the parent I am in our house. And so the context of children's behaviour as well is that I can let stuff go in my house that I just know is not worth having the battle about. But I don't feel as confident to do that when I'm, you know, at a football pitch with my kids, or I'm in Asda, or, you know, like I used to go to Asda with the kids. Like, the day out, treat them.
I think, and that is very correct, actually. The judgment that you can get for stuff like that would be, you know, and I think that's where sometimes, often we hear from families who, you know, have listed a support network as long as your arm when they've gone into the adoption process, and 3 weeks later, you know, most of them have kind of disappeared. And I think that that's kind of part of that as well, is the behaviours that they express. It might not just be kind of what they expect from their friends who, you know, are parenting these children. They probably expect them to come along and behave and all that kind of stuff. I think we as a family are very lucky because in terms of the physical stuff, there has never been anywhere it's happened outside of the home that it's been hidden, shall we say. You know, it just happened to the point where we stopped going after you because we were mortified when it happened. But same rules apply, you know. You know, grandmother has experienced it. She's been there when it's happened, can't understand how it might have happened. So, you know, trying to help her to understand that, you know, a kind of sensory thing may be that she loves to kind of, you know, brush with her fingertips when she's sitting on the sofa, you know, and they're having the cuddle. This when they were much younger, when they were having the cuddle watching telly, but actually they don't like that because they need firm kind of cuddle, and that reaction, the reaction from the feather-like fingertips was just a right elbow in the face for her, you know, and it escalated from there, because obviously, you know, so that's, we're not just talking about, you know, it being within families, and I guess that's part of the support network thing, is if we've got support networks, then we need to make sure that they, you know, fully understand how to deal with, and they can watch and learn as well. And, you know, I'm thankful that that has happened over time. But, you know, early days, it was very much.
Yeah. And I think it's a really, it's a really interesting, it's a really, you have to see the whole thing in the round, because I think, again, it's back to that initial point of, you know, I've been to events, and I remember there was a woman came over from America, and she was this incredibly charismatic woman who was able to give these great stories of how she took this kind of this ragamuffin child, and she did X, she did Y, she did Z, and then, you know, 6 months later there was this perfect all singing, all dancing child. And the problem is, you go away from that with hope, and then it, you know, within hours it's dissolved into nothing because you tried, and your child told you to F off, or, you know, you know, or you just didn't have that resolve. And it's, so I think one of the key things that I'm really keen that we do with all families is you teach principles. You develop people's understanding of what's going on. Really good, solid principles about how to see into a child's inner world, but also to kind of see into your inner world, you know, because we'll often talk about how to regulate your children. Heck, the first step is regulate yourself, because I didn't know how, you know, how angry I could get until I had children. You know, you just, that some of the things that are happening to you, that they tap into your, you know, your own upbringing, your own expectations, your own anxieties, and then you just, you know, you lose the plot.
Yeah. And you need to, you know, that's one, I think that's actually one of the main things that I think as well, is kind of regulating yourself, because, you know, if you see something coming, you're going to be anxious. You know, if you don't see it coming and it starts to kind of build, you're going to get anxious. So you're kind of, your own regulation is going to be out the window before you even start. So then to go into this position, you know, situation where neither of you are regulated, you know, and it's something that, you know, schools are starting to learn as well, is, you know, about, well, I say schools, not all, but some are starting to understand about regulation for themselves, for teachers, you know, because teachers dealing with children who, you know, have kicked off in the class. Well, if the teacher is, you know, if they're not regulated, then they can't deal with the issue. So it's not about leaving it days and days and days, but it's about kind of, you know, doing something with it. And I think that as parents who experience that, so I'm parents and carers who experience that kind of thing, I think they could learn a lot from us, actually, how to deal with it.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, exactly.
I am conscious we said we only do half an hour, and I think that what we're really both wanting to do is to kind of really support parents and carers and professionals to start to think a little bit differently about the impact of challenging behavior on the systems, and then to think about strategies and underlying principles for walking out of that, you know. And we're not pretending that you're going to spend 3 hours with us on a Friday morning in March and come away and kind of click your fingers and everything's going to be fantastic. But for me, it's about putting people, getting themselves in a position where they understand what's going on, but then also starting to have some really effective principles that are going to help them start to walk out of that. So I'm very looking forward to it. Very looking forward to it. Is that even a phrase?
It is. I think it is a very looking forward to it phrase. And I think for me as well, you know, it's about being equipped to help look inside your own kind of self and understand what it is that maybe, you know, what you could be not doing better as a parent, because you're not doing anything wrong, but it's how you deal with it when it escalates, and how you can maybe equip yourself with just some knowledge before you go into these situations. Because these situations Patricia said, they're always spoiling us, always by surprise. Well, majority of the time, not all the time. Sometimes we can see them coming. So, you know, to be able to kind of have a little file in your head to be able to kind of just pull stuff out, click of a finger is sometimes very useful. And that's what we tend to give you.
Excellent. I'm almost excited. No, I am excited. I'm genuinely excited. So, are we going to keep the webcasts going for a couple more weeks at least, aren't we? I think that's our plan.
I think we didn't plan to start them, but then lockdown happened, so we decided to do them again, didn't we? So we're going to plough on for a few weeks, yeah?
Yeah, I haven't told you this, but I've booked someone for next week.
Oh, fabulous.
School exclusions expert.
Oh, I say.
Yeah.
That'll be an interesting one.
It will be. So
is she an excluder or is she just an expert?
No, she's got some really interesting perspectives on, you know, on the kind of why children. She's kind of someone who's campaigning to see things done differently and to kind of reduce exclusion. And also about, sorry, she's not exclusions. I've said the wrong word, school refusal. That's a totally different thing.
You do this every week, honestly. Every week.
Exclusion, refusal.
Yeah, no, I think.
I'm not bringing my A game to the webcasts, am I?
Yeah, you're obviously, it's a bit late. Anyway, we've gone way over our time. and we've got things to do, so.
Yep. Yeah, got to get ready, and I've got to go and I can confess that my teenager, my 15-year-old, has turned semi-normal. So we're very excited about that. She was caught smiling yesterday and laughing and joking and was willing to engage in light banter that when no one was offended. There you go.
Wow. Well done you.
One swallow does not make a swing. And Luana, yes, school refusal, I think, does sound interesting. So she's going to look at stuff around how schools then respond and how sometimes that can get into, I'm answering a question, how can that can get into sometimes safeguarding when it's actually about children's mental health? So there you go.
Mm.
So that's next week.
Next
Fran.
Week, yeah.
Excellent. So, well, I'm going to say goodbye.
Au revoir.
Bon Jovi.
Anchovy. Still live.
Oh. Still. Your broadcast has ended, you crazy fool.
Oh, dear.